Thank you, Dr. Pond. It's a pleasure to be here. You mentioned we have some CSU students here. We do. I think the bus got here, and they're going to earn some points by being here listening to the rest of the group. First of all, I'm going to have Miranda Siss, who's a graduate student with us at CSU, just take a minute and invite you to do a survey. So, Miranda, come on up. Miranda is a graduate student. She came through CSU and is now working on a master's degree. And a Nebraska girl.
As Dr. Whittier said, I'm a grad student in the Beef Management Systems at CSU. And this is kind of my special project. So the National Beef Quality Audit is funded by your checkoff investment. This year, we're asking you as producers to provide input to assure a strong grassroots response. Please take a moment to stop by either the CSU or the NCBA booth and fill out a survey for me. Or we have some of the girls over here that we'll pass them out to if you'd like to take it for me. Thanks,
Miranda. Well, I'm going to start off with a disclaimer. I'm not a geneticist. I'll concede that. I'm trying to keep this as simple so that I can understand it as possible. I was asked to give a presentation a few months ago about just an overview of what genomics are and what all this DNA information is about, and so I'll leave the technical part of this to Matt Spangler to correct things I might say that are incorrect. But my mission is to give you that background, that kind of that in a way step back to for a minute to eighth grade biology, where we learned first about DNA and how DNA is put together and so on. So Matt will talk more detail. We've tried to collaborate a little bit about our speeches, and so that we weren't repeating each other. Matt will come along and give a little more specific information about the process. Yesterday morning, we had several good presentations about the increase in productivity. And if obviously in the things that we do in our industry, as you've looked at changes in output per cow. One of these graphs represents the change in pounds of output per beef cow. That scale just continues to go up. The dairy industry is another good example of that, that selection improves output. So by selecting for milk production in dairies, dairy cows, that output has gone up. The corn industry, you see on the bottom right there, that increase in corn yields. When genetics were understood and selection pressure was applied, the yield per acre has gone up dramatically. So the questions that I try to address in this is, what are the marker-assisted EPDs? Say a little bit about EPDs. Very familiar with that in this group, I'm sure, at this point. What can be learned from genomics? What tools are available today or becoming available to use in genetic selection? And then what does it mean at the ranch level? What sort of things are important, and how can we make that come about? I guess there's been a lot of history, including the Human Genome Project, but back in 2003, I believe it was, is circled here. I'm sure that's a little hard to read from the back, but in 2003, there was a lot of funding and effort put toward understanding the bovine genome. And a cow from the meat, not Meat Animal Research Center, but the Miles City Experiment Station, a Hereford Line 1 cow, very well-known pedigree and basis for that, was the first candidate to identify the genomic, the gene map of the cow. That was accomplished, and as a result of that, the tools that are becoming available are increasingly a part of what we do in the cattle business. a lot of terminology that relates to this in the proceedings, and I'd invite you to the very back of the book of the proceedings, and the reason it's in the back is that because I didn't get it in on time, and I'll confess that. But if you go clear to the back, the write-up and the proceedings, the things that I'll cover, and particularly this terminology, tried to bring that in focus a little bit more as you see these terms, both in the trade show and in trade magazines and so on. that the terminology that's being used along this line may help explain some of the things that we're doing. So just real quick to step back to some of the biology. DNA, of course, is the genetic code. It's present in every cell, the nucleus of every cell, every organism, and it controls the chemical changes that take place in cells, the products that are produced from cells, the proteins, and so on. DNA is made up of a backbone, chemically a sugar phosphate backbone, and then these little side chains, the base pairs, that the sequence of those and the specific arrangement of those controls the output from the cell. Okay, and so there's four of them primarily: adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine. You may or may not remember that from early biology, but they match up in a specific way, and therefore that's the code and a way to communicate information from cell, or from production of cell, and then also through the inheritance. So the backbone, as DNA is replicated, matches up in a certain way, and so these base pairs that you see in the middle become an important component and actually are the key to the genomic understanding and predictability that's going on with our processes today. So the sequence becomes the genetic code. These codes then, the three base pairs, code for various proteins in the cell, and the different amino acids make up the various proteins. And so the sequences and how they are arranged become a driving factor. We know about genes. Genes are, we understand that there's a certain gene for hair coat color or polled versus horned, those kind of things. And that's basically the cellular level of how this inheritance works. Cattle have 30 chromosomes. On those chromosomes there are different genes. Not each gene does various things. And so what really becomes important, and I guess to put this genomic idea together, is that as these cells, let's just take this cell for a minute. You see up in the top a cell with the chromosomes. The chromosomes code for various these base pairs that we talked about. And so the base pairs create different proteins, and the proteins then are what control the output, the phenotype of the animal itself. Along that coding, there are specific places called, as mentioned here, single nucleotide polymorphism. Now that's an academic word, a lot of jargon, if you will, but in simple terms, that's a flag along that chain of information that indicates or has been referenced to more information, to specific genes, and so and how the animal behaves and the way they grow or the way they reproduce in some such situations. So these flags, as you see illustrated there on that diagram, or the SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphism, or polymorphic, the SNP becomes the signal. When those SNPs differ from one animal to the other, they're known as the genetic markers. Okay, so the genetic markers allow the inheritance of a region of a genome to be replicated and to be understood and to follow across generations. As you see here in this illustration on the right-hand side, a general population, by way of illustration, would have a G or a guanine in that base pair, but a certain subunit of that population, illustrated here as 6% of the population, instead of having a G, has a T. And that T then becomes a key of referencing what's going on farther down the DNA sequence. As more and more of these SNPs are identified and understood biologically, that gives increased estimation of the animal's genome or genomic map, the overall genomic map, and that's kind of basically how it works.